Okay, welcome to part two of our Toe Meat Leather podcast, our recap of all the conferences. I'm here again with Andrew and Nigel. We're going to get right into it. So, we were talking a lot about parity, or the lack thereof, in the past few segments. And I want to move to a conference where I think parity has actually kind of hurt them in a lot of ways. The Pac-12 out west. When you look at this conference, I think there was a lot of letdown for some of these teams, a lot of strong starts and stumbles along the way, like with Utah, UCLA. But now if you look at the conference, only two of these teams are not going to be in a bowl game. And that's not in the divisions. That's the entire conference. So we're talking about teams that went out, had strong performances, and made a big impact on the year. And I just really like this conference. I can't stay up for a lot of these games, but, you know, I love the way they run their offenses. I love everything about the rivalries out there. It's a fun conference to watch. Stanford's the only team right now that's got an outside chance of making the playoff if they beat USC. I don't think USC is thrilled about the idea. Gosh, I just like this conference a lot. And Nigel, let's stop having me talk about it. Tell me what you think about the parity this year in the conference and what we should be looking forward to in the years to come.
I think parity hurt them a little bit in terms of the college football playoffs. I think, like you said, it makes for exciting football because you do have these teams just going to battle every week, you know, and I think Andrew stated it earlier, it makes it exciting when you have just teams going back and forth. I think also them playing a 9-game schedule kind of hurt them. If they had taken one of those games off from beating each other up to beat somebody else up, I think it would have definitely put in more in their favor. And maybe Andrew definitely would have, maybe you can explain to me a little bit more why they do a 9-game schedule. I guess that's, I never fully grasped why they do they approach it in that way. But I think this conference has a lot to look forward to. I think they have some good talent in terms of the coaching staff, in terms of the players. You know, Oregon's going to lose Vernon Adams after this year. He only had 1 year of eligibility left when he came to Oregon. So we'll see kind of how Oregon does. But they seem to be able to, you know, bring in quality talent year after year. The Arizona schools are performing as good as they have in a very long time. So I think that's going to be very exciting to see kind of how they go. Obviously, Jared Goff, he's probably going to leave here and go to the draft. I don't think he definitely has some eligibility left, but I don't think it's in his best, you know, in his best mind to, you know, stay another year. I think he's learned as much as he can. He'd be best served being in an NFL locker room and maybe sitting behind a good quality QB for a little bit. But still, I think they've just laid a good foundation for their conference going forward. And I'm excited actually to see them, Logan, like you said, they have so many teams qualified for the bowl game season. I just can't wait to see them. I think they're going to, you know, definitely make some noise and restore themselves, even though the parity may have hurt them. I think they'll definitely show people that while there's parity in terms of among teams there, I think that they definitely have a general overall strength on the college football landscape.
Andrew, I'm going to turn it over to you. I'd like to hear more about some of the teams that came out and surprised people, because frankly, Washington State and Washington kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think people were expecting Washington State to be 8-4, no matter who you ask. And Washington, with a new coach, came out, did very well with the lack of talent that they have right now. And then, like you've been talking about all year, Utah, very young, and, of course, Arizona and Arizona State. Go ahead.
I think the big thing about Washington is they've got a lot of good young players. I mean, you could watch them with Browning and the running backs, and you could see kind of a little bit of their maturation as the year went on, and they really set themselves up, especially with as talented of a defense as they've had to really help themselves out next year, because that's the thing. I mean, it's always interesting to see a coach that just takes the chance, plays the young players, takes the lumps, and kind of sets himself up for going into the future. you know. And then, you know, obviously, like you said, Utah is probably the biggest surprise to me. No one really expected them to do a lot. They kind of had a rough year last year, you know. And then as well as, you know, no one really expected USC after the Sarkisian fiasco to end up winning their division. And, I, you know, as good as Stanford is, I think USC might have a legitimate chance of winning that game. I don't know if they will, but I definitely think it's going to end up being a little bit closer than people think. I also think that USC, even though it's not a sexy name or a sexy hire, I think keeping on Clay Helton in the next couple of years, we're going to look back and see that was a very, very good decision for them.
USC has been an interesting team year in and year out because they seem to have coaching troubles every year, but they power through it by the sheer talent of the recruits that they pull in. I think that speaks very well to the tradition and expectancy that people view from USC. Now, Nigel, this goes back to kind of what we've been talking about already, but we're looking at, in the North, we've had Stanford and Oregon year in and year out. Now you've got the challengers with Washington State, potentially, and Washington with the talent and the coach that they're going to have in the future. And meanwhile, in the South, Utah, I think, came out of nowhere and surprised a bunch of people. UCLA has been challenging in the past few years. And, of course, Arizona and Arizona State, who are in and out year to year. Who should we expect next year to see in the conference championship with the kind of talent that these teams are pulling in?
I definitely think that Washington, like Andrew said, is definitely building something for the future. I think that's definitely a team that should definitely be paying attention to. I think USC, even though, you know, you think to yourself, wow, they're in the conference championship game. How am I going to say that they should even have a better year? But I think that's just what, like Andrew said, all the adversity they have, all the talent they have some good young pieces there. You know, who will take over for Kessel after he leaves will be a big question for them. But in terms of the running game, they're stacked at the running game. They always seem to be stacked at the wide receiver. They always seem to get the best recruits. I think USC will have an even better year because, like Andrew said, I think it's going to be one of those under, you know, not as talked about as much hire. It's going to be under, you know, underappreciated. I think the new hire, taking off the interim label of Helton will definitely pay dividends here for them. I think it's definitely a team that's going to be on the up and up. Kyle Willingham always seems to have Utah talked about. Now they're in the Power 5 conference. They're getting more exposure. They're playing more quality opponents. They always seem to rise to the occasion. I think all three of those teams are definitely teams that we should be paying attention to this time next year.
Now, Nigel, if you get a chance, why don't you look up some of the out-of-conference stats for the Pac-12? Because I kind of want to know how they performed out-of-conference. I don't know for certain, but I don't think they did poorly. Andrew, do you have any other remaining thoughts on the conference as far as them moving forward? You know, what can other conferences learn from the way that the Pac-12 has been performing the past few years?
I think it's going to push a lot of conferences to completely ignore the call for a 9-game schedule. I think that's one of the big things you're going to see is it's going to make conferences even more leery of adding that extra conference game instead of allowing them to have some freedom to schedule.
It's definitely been a dangerous move on their part, but it's hard to argue that it's not drawing in the fans and increasing the number of rivalries between those teams. So I think if you're looking for an income perspective, that might have been a positive move by the Pac-12.
Out of conference, they actually did pretty well. They did 29-8 out of conference, and they went 6-2 against Power 5 opponents. So, I mean, they did really well this past year with the Pac-12.
Fair enough to say it's probably deserves to be one of the toughest conferences out there whether it's respected that way or not. They might not have a playoff team, but again, we'll look at the conference championship matchup. We're going with USC and Stanford. Stanford's obviously ranked higher at 7. They're the only one with a chance at a playoff spot. But USC has had that talent, and they are just so hot right now. I feel like Mugatu. Oh, that USC is so hot right now. Nigel, who do you have in this matchup?
I think this is going to be one of the closer games out of obviously all the games that are being played this weekend. Sorry, I'm yawning. I don't know why. I'm so old. I'm thoroughly surprised by USC's adversity. USC seems to be turning over a new leaf. Their only loss was to Oregon, although they got, you know, land blasted in that game. In their past 6, that was the only loss that they that happened across. I'm actually going to go with USC here. I think USC is going to win this game. I think they're turning over just a new leaf in terms of the last time that they were in this position. They had fired Lane Kiffin, they had an interim coach, and they decided to go outside and hire a different guy. This time they decided to lift the interim tag, lift the guy, show that he could do this on a consistent basis. And I think this is another reason, agreeing with Andrew, that it'll turn out better for them than it did this past go round. And I think this will be the start of it. I think USC gets this win as the Pac-12 champion.
All right, Andrew, I've got this sinking feeling that you're going with Stanford. Can you tell me why?
Well, Stanford's already beaten USC once this year.
That's a pretty good reason.
I mean, it's not the only reason. I think Stanford, you know, again, I think we get to the point where they're both talented teams. I just think Stanford has been on a bit more of a roll. I think that USC game was one of the first games you really saw Christian McCaffrey come out and run and make some plays. I mean, I think it's going to be a hard-fought game. You know, Stanford had to come back in the fourth quarter to win it this last time, but I just think the talent with Stanford and the lack of depth at USC are what are really going to come into play.
Fair enough. So if Andrew's right, Stanford at least still has a shot. If not, Nigel, maybe they're looking at next year.
Yeah, no, USC is that they're a different team than they were. That was the third game of the season. And this is also when they had Sarkisian still there. And we all know what ended up becoming of that. And I don't know if this team was as focused or as much of a good position to win the game, maybe with him at the helm. So we'll see if that really does play a factor here.
That does
if
make
it's a closer game, it's a better game, etc.
That does make me think of a bowl game I want to see, UNC versus Stanford. That would be a fun matchup. But anyway, we've been talking a lot about conferences with 9 scheduled conference games, which made me think of our next conference here. The Big 12, the one conference that doesn't have a conference champion, really. Conference championship. I guess you could argue that Oklahoma is the clear conference champion, but you don't always see that with confidence year in, year out. Andrew, the Big 12 is one of those conferences that is about the big money, and they've kind of stunted their growth because of it. They're really looking for big market teams, and they don't care that they don't make a big impact top to bottom because of it. But this year they struggled. Oklahoma stumbled out of the gate just because they lost to Texas, and they had a tough game against Tennessee. But right now they're favored as probably the second best team in the land, depending on who you ask. I heard that a lot on the playoff countdown tonight. Andrew, what are your thoughts on the top 4 teams in the conference? Baylor, I almost said Kansas. Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is Oklahoma's rebounded extremely well from the inexplicable loss to Texas. I think they kind of got back to trying to run the ball with Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon. And Baker Mayfield's been an absolute revelation at quarterback. I think he's been a lot better than anyone really expected him to be. You know, they have the bad loss to Texas, which hurts them a little bit, but you know, they've got the impressive wins over the Oklahoma States, the TCUs, the Baylors. You know, the other teams who I believe only losses are to Oklahoma and each other. So that definitely sets up a well put together idea of parity, but top heavy parity. You know, because then you've got teams like Iowa State and Kansas that are just, Kansas especially. No offense, Kansas fans, if we have any. But you know, I mean, if Oklahoma may be, you know, with North Carolina, the hottest team in the country right now, and they get an off week this week. They don't have to play in the conference championship game, which, in all honesty, I don't see hurting them too much. I think they've done enough and they've shown enough to not get dropped out. So, but you know, and to your question, I can understand them not just wanting to add teams willy nilly that really don't bring a lot to the conference. I think the Big 12 is also kind of struggling a little bit with its identity, because I think when it originally was founded as kind of the Big 8 plus the four Texas schools, and then you bumped it to where, you know, the Big 12 South was the four Texas schools, the two Oklahoma schools, and then everyone else was in the North, I think you kind of got a split really between the different teams. And I think the Big 12 is still trying to figure out where it wants to fit in and what it wants to be in terms of a conference. I think it's why you haven't seen them really stretch out and start to add, as well as many of their options to add. You know, they're not going to add another Texas team. They already have four or five of them, you know, so there's no need to add another Texas team. You're not going to add Tulsa. It's a small private school in Oklahoma, and that doesn't help you. There's not another team in Kansas. You know, Iowa's already in the Big Ten, so, I mean, you already started to have to push. You know, I think they added West Virginia as kind of an emergency. Oh, Lord, we've got to add somebody. Plus, West Virginia was looking for a home with the Big East collapsing. But that, I mean, adding West Virginia didn't really make a lot of sense because, you know, in football, it's not as big of a travel deal. But when you're playing midweek basketball games or volleyball or other, and you've got to, you know, say you've got West Virginia's got to play at Texas Tech. I mean, that's insane on a Tuesday. You know, I really think they need to try to find a partner for West Virginia, but I don't really see one outside of maybe Cincinnati.
Mm. Wow, that turned dark quick for the Big 12. Oh.
Well, I mean, I don't see them collapsing. It's just I don't really see a lot of where they're going to expand.
I mean, I think they're happy where they are right now, all things considered, because like we were talking about, a lot of it's based around that big money in Texas, and that's what it's all been based around. But like you said, there's just not a lot of opportunity for growth out there. And I think a lot of the teams that aren't, you know, in Texas or Oklahoma are just having a hard time competing. And also, like you said, travel takes its toll when you're not dealing with football games, you know, things outside of football season. Nigel, I'll feel like we're leaving you in the dark over there. Why don't you give us your thoughts on the matter, and if you've got their records pulled up, why don't you give us a little information about how the Big 12 did out of conference this year? I'm looking, 6 out of the 10 teams made it to a bowl game, but it was close, to say the least.
Yeah, I see where Andrew's coming from, and you know, it's a very pointed discussion that needs to be had. I, for one, have definitely been ranting for the Big 12 to add another team. I think And I thought that a championship would still hurt them this year. It ended up not hurting them this year. Oklahoma, you know, made it very easy for them to crown a champion, a single champion, and thus I think that's why the Big 12 will be represented in the college football playoffs. But my thought process is that eventually they're going to have to add a team. And like what Andrew stated in his case, that West Virginia was added as a panic move. I think you don't want to be in a situation where you have to be in a panic move ever again. So with that being said, you need to be identifying who you want to add here. And it doesn't have to be immediately. I think you have time right now to survey the field, see how things go, and make some adjustments from there. But I think that they definitely need to be looking. You know, even if it's on the sly, even if it's quietly, you need to be looking, because you need to be in a position where you have a semblance of strength. And right now, if you had to look at the Power Five conferences, not in terms of strength, but in terms of stability, the Big 12 is the weakest. The ACC maybe the weakest Power Five conference in terms of football, but they have basketball to fall back on. They're like, look at all the quality basketball teams we have, et cetera, et cetera. So I definitely think the Big 12 has a lot going for it. If you had told me 5 years ago, wouldn't be a school that would be talked about as much with the Big 12 in terms of the college football playoffs, I would have thought you were lying. They are doing just fine with TCU and Baylor and Oklahoma representing them right now. And I think obviously it helps that Oklahoma's there, and it adds a third cog to them getting some recognition. But I think that the best thing that can happen for the Big 12 is Texas gets back in the mix, not only to add that fuel to it, but also because Texas just carries such a name recognition that it's just going to help push them into, you know, just a different sphere in terms of just influencing the college football playoffs, the teams that they play out of conference, you know, and so on and so on. So, you know, in terms of the out of conference, the Big 12 went 23-7, you know, pretty good. They only went four and four in terms of Power Five schools. So, and it's mostly because they play that same kind of schedule as the Pac-12. They play, you know, the round robin. So they play 9 conference games. So they don't get to play a lot of out of school, you know, conferences. And like Andrew stated in previous, even earlier podcasts, you know, they're going to play a lot of smaller schools so they can get that extra home game and get that revenue. So,
all right. Well,
yeah, that's what I should go against.
All right. Well, they don't have a championship game per se this week to look forward to. I think the biggest thing would be, my two questions for you guys regarding that would be, if Oklahoma wins the playoff somehow, what does that say as far as the conference strength? Does that make a bigger impression on you, or is it just the lack of depth that this conference has that's really hurting them in the future? And also, I'll go ahead and throw it out as a joke. Baylor is playing Texas this week. Texas doesn't even have a chance to get into a bowl game. Why do you think Baylor wins? So, Andrew, I'll start with you.
I think if Oklahoma wins the national title, it shows that Oklahoma's the best team in the country. I don't really care that much about what Oklahoma means for the conference. I mean, it's going to create these stupid narratives like we were talking about earlier, where SEC, SEC, because Alabama won a national title. Well, yeah, but Alabama winning a national title doesn't make Vanderbilt better. You know, Oklahoma winning a national title doesn't make Kansas any better. So, I mean, that's my take on it, is it shows that Oklahoma's the best team in the country, and they're the national champion. That's that. And I don't think Texas has a chance this weekend.
All right, thank you for answering both questions. Nigel?
I guess one question I want to ask first. You know, I definitely think Oklahoma, it would definitely send a message to the Big 12, definitely have some quality, super quality teams. I think that they could. I really think they'll end up facing Alabama or Clemson. I don't think they'll have a chance to really, unless some madness happens this weekend, I don't think they'll have a chance to really get away from one of those opponents. And I think they match up pretty well with both Alabama and Clemson in terms of their defense and in terms of their offense. I think they would be it would be a good challenge for both of them. I'm going to go ahead and tell Logan that if Oklahoma plays Alabama, that Alabama will use the patented SEC wild card of we'll knock out your quarterback, and you know that's how we'll win the game. So, in terms of the Oklahoma, the Baylor Texas game, it's sad that when Baylor's third string offensive talent is better than Texas's first string offensive talent. So,
but that is the case.
But that is the case right now.
All right, fair enough, guys. It's been a long night, but let's move on to our last conference, the most top-heavy conference by far, the Big Ten. Now, I've been trying to run through this in my head as far as percentage-wise, but I'm pretty sure I'm right in this. Percentage-wise, they have the lowest amount of teams going to a bowl game. Only 8 out of 14 are going to make it. That's practically half the conference missing bowl games. And that's not something you're seeing in a lot of the other conferences right now. Obviously, though, they are the favorite to have multiple teams in the playoff if someone stumbles down the line. Michigan State, Ohio State, and Iowa are all in line right now. So their good teams are very, very good. Well, depending on your perspective, Andrew, I know you've got views on that, because you've been harping on Michigan not being as strong as people thought all year. So why don't you go ahead and tell us more, Andrew. Are these top teams really as strong as people think they are?
You know, maybe. Yeah, I mean, they've won in conference. They've won out of conference. You know, Michigan State lost to a bad Nebraska team. Michigan State fans are still salty about that call. You know, Ohio State's only loss was to Michigan State, and Iowa hasn't lost to anyone. So, you know, I think the biggest thing, though, especially that helped Iowa in the West, is they missed Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan. You know, their crossover games were not the same crawl. You know, they didn't have to play the big heavy hitters in the East. And so I think that's definitely helped them. You know, now going undefeated in a power conference is a great accomplishment. You know, I don't really want to take too much away from Iowa, but I do think that they kind of lucked out in their scheduling a little bit. You know, I mean, you're going to think Michigan State and Ohio State are always good. They've always been good for the past couple of years. You know, those two coaches have done great jobs in identifying, bringing talent, and coaching up that talent. I think Ohio State was a little bit of a letdown this year. I think games were closer than they expected to be. I think a loss to Michigan State really hurt. You know, and now they're kind of on the outside looking in, hoping for a bit of a miracle to have a shot at the playoffs. You know, Iowa came out of absolutely nowhere. You know, Pat Fitzgerald put together a 10-win season at Northwestern. Nobody really expected that. I think Wisconsin was a little down from what we've seen in the past. I don't think they ran the ball like they wanted to, and I think, you know, they've had some quarterback issues, so it'll be interesting to see how Paul Christ rebuilds that program. You know, Mike Riley in Nebraska, the first year of the Mike Riley experiment did not get off to a good start, so he's definitely a guy that's going to have to do something next year, the year after. He's going to be out, and Nebraska will be looking for another head coach. You know, now the rest of them, you know, Minnesota kind of let us down a little bit. We expected them to be better than that. Penn State, you know, they went 7-5, you know, that, and then they actually just fired their offensive coordinator, so I think James Franklin might be a guy next year that's kind of playing for his job a little bit. Kevin Wilson made a bowl game at Indiana. Congratulations to him and the Hoosiers. This is their first bowl game in a good couple of years. They've got an offense that can score on anyone. They just can't play defense. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of changes he tries to make going into next year. Then I still don't know how Daryl Hazel has a job at Purdue.
Yeah. I think they've just decided that they don't really care who has the job at Purdue. It's not going to make much of a difference.
Wait, hold on. Give me 1 second. I want to look up his... Because I heard a stat for one of his games during the game against Nebraska. So in 3 years at Purdue, Hazel has gone 2-22 in the Big Ten. His win against Nebraska this year was his first home win in a Big Ten game in 3 years in the conference.
That makes me sad just listening to it. And I can tell Nigel's tearing up over there right now. My gosh.
Drew Brees is turning over in his grave.
Drew Brees might be the next head coach of Purdue.
Wow. I would welcome that. After all the times he's beaten the Falcons, I would welcome that. Nigel, on a different topic, as far as the East, you're looking at probably three of the top coaches in the land right now at Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State. Michigan State's consistently been a top program in that conference. Ohio State's got Urban Meyer, won the national championship last year, and Michigan just picked up Harbaugh. Is it going to be tough to be a standout coach in that conference, or are we looking at actually the opposite of what we're seeing in the SEC, where this could potentially be good for these teams to have those tough coaches going against each other?
I love the way you framed that. I don't think that it will be quite like the SEC West. I think that these coaches are a little bit more evenly matched to me from my perspective. And, you know, Andrew may definitely disagree with me, but I think these coaches they're going to feed off of each other. It's definitely going to be hard to win on that side just to make it to the championship game. You know, we didn't even bring up James Franklin, who had success at Vanderbilt and is having at least some kind of success at Penn State. You know, Maryland's going to try to get back in the mix. Maryland is coming. Maryland and Rutgers are both trying to get back in the mix. Rutgers will kind of see what their approach is going to be. With Maryland, they have, you know, the CEO of Under Armour is a Maryland grad, and he played on the football team. So he's going to pour as much money as possible into that school, and he's going to almost try to be similar to a Phil Knight in that sense, in terms of both a sponsor and providing apparel to that school, which we've seen him do in the past. And it's going to be interesting to see kind of what kind of coach goes there at Maryland. With that still being an unknown, you still have four quality coaches on that side of the Big Ten. It's going to be hellacious to try to win that side of the division, go undefeated, try to stay in the college football playoff talks, make it to the Big Ten title game, win that title game. It's going to be, by the way, Kirby Smart just named his new head coach.
Say that again.
Kirby Smart was named Georgia's head coach just now.
Allegedly.
Barring last minute development. Right. So basically, Nick Saban taking his heart out of his chest.
Sorry to derail you a little bit, Nigel. But there's an interesting comment, and as much as you hate sports radio, where they talked about when McElwain took the Colorado State job, Saban talked him into staying around for the national title game. And actually, when Rick took the Georgia job, Bobby Bowden did the same thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how Saban handles Smart trying to do both.
That'll be interesting, not to get too off topic, but that'll be definitely interesting because Georgia has a really good recruiting class set up right now. If Kirby Smart is saying, it'll basically come down to him saying if he can do both jobs, kudos to him, but he's going to try to establish the staff, he's got to try to retain that recruiting class, and does he think, is Nick Saban setting him up for success? Does he owe Nick Saban for getting him to this level of the game, et cetera, et cetera? There are a lot of narratives going on. I definitely agree, Andrew. It's going to be interesting to watch.
All right, guys. Well, let's wrap up our Big Ten / UGA talk and go on. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Andrew. Talk about what you got to talk about.
So, you know, Nuts, I think you're right about Maryland. They're kind of in a rock and a hard place. The one thing about it, though, is there's a good bit of talent in Maryland. I mean, the D.C. Catholic League has a lot of talent. A lot of those Maryland private schools do a really good job of recruiting the talent and putting it all in one place. One of the biggest issues is Maryland's never really been able to keep a lot of that talent home. I think if they can bring in a coach who can start to do something like that and keep a lot of that talent in the D.C. area, in Maryland, to play for Maryland, then I think he will definitely have a good shot at being able to be successful. Now, how successful, that's another question for another day.
The Big Ten East is going to be hard. Any new coach that comes in there is going to have to be given the time to kind of establish himself, especially in such a hard landscape. Why only are you going to have to recruit against these guys? You said the Maryland Catholic League is pretty good. Maryland won't have to deal with as much interfering in terms of, the other Big Ten schools going against them. But we know that Urban Meyer can go and recruit anywhere. And if he sees a talent, a player that he wants to acquire, he's going to come into your backyard and try to get him. So I definitely would like to see Maryland really take off and get itself back into the game. But, I mean, the Big Ten East alone is going to be a gauntlet, and it's going to be interesting to see. We talked about James Franklin early last week. Are we going to be able to see coaches given the time to develop the talent that they need to develop to be able to be competitive, not only in that side of the Big Ten, but also in college football in general?
Yes, whatever you just said, totally. All right, are we ready to talk about the conference championship now?
Yes. I already know who I'm going to pick.
Andrew, you got any additional thoughts you want to share with us?
No, I think I'm good for now.
All right, then. Well, Nigel, since you got us all hyped up, I'll let you start. Obviously, not Ohio State, which surprised everybody. Michigan State and Iowa. Iowa looking to stay undefeated. You've picked against them like 7 times this year. I guess you just hate corn, Nigel. Michigan State's looked very good. They've beaten a bunch of ranked teams. It's been close, but they've won. They have that glaring loss against Nebraska, which is another corn state. It makes for an interesting matchup. Who do you got?
I'm going to go with Iowa. And I'm going with Iowa simply because I picked against them, like you stated, all year. And they still have not lost a game yet. I'm not picking against them anymore. I just refuse. Till somebody goes out and beats them, I'm not picking against them. I just can't anymore. I have to learn, right? I have to learn that Iowa is the truth, and the children of the corn will not be denied.
I think this is a lesson as a Georgia Tech student. It might be one of those lessons where whichever team you back ends up losing, and that's just the way it goes. Andrew, you feel the same way. Are the children of the corn going to come out on top?
Well, first of all, I am absolutely deathly afraid of the children of the corn. It's the reason I will never set foot in the states of Iowa or Nebraska. I think Michigan State can win it. I think they've gotten better. I think getting Connor Cook back has helped them a lot. I think they're finally adjusting to some of the injuries that they've had throughout the year, and they're finally able to score some points. And I think that Iowa has played well. Unfortunately, I don't think we've really seen a lot out of them because they haven't played any really great teams. So I think this will be one of their first real big tests. But I just think that Antonio and Michigan State are too much and just have rounded in form too well recently. And I think it sets up for Michigan State to be one of the Big Ten teams that gets to the playoff.
All right. Well, I like that that's the one matchup we can say for certain that someone is going to be in the playoff one way or the other. But that does make for an interesting matchup. I think, was that the one that you disagreed on? Oh, no, you also disagreed on USC-Stanford. It'll be interesting to see who comes out on top next week. Either way, all of my picks will be perfect because I made none of them. I'm looking forward to that. Well, as always, guys, thank you for joining me. It's been a long night, so I think we'll cut it here, unless y'all have any disagreements.
I mean, we have tons of disagreements, but this is not the place for them.
I think
it's true.
This is,
you don't want witnesses.
This is actually exactly the place for them, but just not tonight. Anyway, to all our listeners, thank you again, as always, for listening to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please shoot them to toemeatleather@gmail.com. Again, that is toemeatleather@gmail.com. Thanks again. And as my grandmama always said, do unto others as they would do unto you. Whoobity whoobity woo, don't eat a shoe. Have a good night.